Hi, this is Brian Castillo.
This is Grant Amon.
Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ashton Olt.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Towers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening
to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
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 It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast featuring ESPN, Big Ten Network, and Inside Lacrosse analyst Mark Dixon. You know him from TV. I know him from way back in the day. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it. Dixie, what's up, brother?
How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Another big week on tap and another one in the books and a giant Tuesday of upsets this week as well.
We're off and running in 2020 for the college lacrosse season. And I think just when you think you might have some things figured out, you may have some questions answered, there's a whole nother set of material that you just haven't studied for. So Army looked absolutely dominant in their first three games of the season. They get upset by Marist. You have the Maryland Terrapins living dangerously throughout their first three games of the season, their last two in particular. They couldn't pull a rabbit out of a hat up in Philadelphia and lose to Villanova. So two pretty darn big upsets midweek or earlier this week, and kind of setting the tone for what should be a terrific slate of games this weekend.
Yeah, I'll throw in St. Joe's beating Delaware 11-8 as well as another bit of a surprise in the Tuesday games. What was the best thing you saw last week, Dix?
I think it's what we're seeing, the unpredictability of this season. And it's going to be an entertaining 2020. No one's going to just kind of forget everything you know when you go into some games. I mean, obviously, you look at trends, you look at some of the realities of a roster. But you just can't have any foregone conclusions. I think that once Army was able to throttle Rutgers last weekend, everybody's like, okay, great, look out. We've got Army-Syracuse this weekend. And that is a game that I think is still highly anticipated. But, was Army looking past Marist? Or is Marist really, really good? Or is it just one of those situations where it's one of those Tuesday games where we've seen a history of upsets happening on those days? I think And that's a good point you make about St. Joe's and Delaware, because Delaware is a team, especially we've seen Towson start out 0-2. Hofstra got a nice win over Michigan this past weekend. Drexel lost a tough one to High Point. UMass, they knock off Ohio State on the road. But that was a Delaware team that a lot of people are thinking, okay, they might be primed for a run at the CAA championship. And St. Joe's beats the Blue Hens. I think it's notable that all three of the losers from Tuesday were road teams. They were on the road. I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but it is disruptive to a normal schedule. And we're accustomed to Tuesday upsets, Dan. But how many times in the past have we had three upsets? And the first two are bona fide two top 10 teams, according to the latest polls. Went on the road, Tuesday game, favorites, and came out with a loss. I mean, how many times have we – and then you throw in that St. Joe's Delaware game, you got three upsets on a Tuesday, but typically you've seen one on a particular given Tuesday. So really interesting stuff.
On any given Tuesday. Dix, I'll say the best thing I saw this past week was Mount St. Mary's getting a big win over Towson. It's huge for them. And you know that our connection at Inside Lacrosse, Tommy Lyons,
right.
A Mount man through and through. And then we had a bunch of kids that Tommy recruited to help work for us. Brendan Doyle, Zach Roberts, a bunch of others that have been nice kids. Really good lacrosse players, and I'm happy to see them get a bit of a signature win. We'll see how well it holds up. Towson seems to be struggling a little bit, but it's a good win for Mount, and hopefully it jump starts them into their NEC conference schedule in a few weeks.
Is that the first time that the Mount's ever beaten Towson in the history of their program, or if not, has it been a long time?
I don't know. I think it's been a while though. Tom used to talk about that game as sort of a barometer of how they would be in their season. They played them a lot early in the season, and I know that's a big win for them.
Yeah. Yeah, and you got to feel good for Tom Gravante, the coach at Mount St. Mary's, one of the best guys in the sport.
Yeah. Hey, let's move on to some of the big games. There's another five games schedule featuring top 20 teams matching up against each other. And a couple other games that you and I talked about seem pretty important for in the big picture of the college season. Let's start with those two games. Harvard at UMass, Saturday at 1 o'clock. Jerry Byrne, our friend, in his debut as the Crimson head coach. UMass also coming off of a good win over Ohio State after losing to Army the week before.
Kind of interesting when you look at this game. Harvard, a late starter, to say the least. It's their first game in 2020, where other teams will have had 3-4 games under their belt. And how apropos for Jerry Byrne to open up his college coaching career against his alma mater at the Division I level, UMass, the Minutemen, who were really a huge question mark after being throttled by Army. But then they go on the road, they go to Ohio State, and they steal one from the Buckeyes, 9-7. So a very interesting game to kick off our slate of action for this coming weekend.
Another game is Princeton, who's 2-0 now, playing at Virginia, number two team in the country, on Saturday at noon.
Michael Sowers, 14 points against Colgate this past Tuesday. I had a chance to tune in to watch that game online, and he's terrific. And they also have a couple of other players that are really impressive. They got a midfielder in particular, number 19, I forget his name. And they're going into the Lions then. They're going into the Virginia Cavaliers, defending national champions, 2-0, impressive wins over Loyola and Lehigh, two hard-fought games for Virginia. So not cakewalks by any stretch of the imagination. So we talk about barometer and litmus test a lot on this podcast, as well as just in general in the sport. Is this the year that Princeton can break through and make a run at an NCAA tournament berth? Michael Sowers' senior season, I think a lot of people would like to be more exposed to Michael Sowers, but it's not all about him. But in this game, will Princeton be a contender in 2020? Their performance this weekend against the Cavaliers could go a long way.
Yeah, Michael Sowers with 11 assists on Tuesday's game against Colgate. That's insane. Is that a school record? It's got to be.
It was an Ivy League record. Not only was it a Princeton record, it was an Ivy League record, 11 assists in one game.
Yeah, he's off to a fast start. What do you think?
And I don't want to be disrespectful to Colgate. Colgate's had a rough start to 2020. But when you think about 11 assists in a game, think about the feeders that have gone through the Ivy League. Tim Goldstein at Cornell, Darren Lowe at Brown, Ryan Boyle, Princeton. You think about other guys who have – those are just the three guys that come to mind immediately.
Yeah, sure.
11 assists, that's a pretty special record, individual accomplishment for him to set an Ivy League record with that number of assists in a single game.
Yeah, another thing that is so strange to hear you say that, is this the year that Princeton can break through and get an NCAA berth? Over the last 25 years, just to think that that is something that would be an achievement for Princeton when they were regular Final Four participants just seems so foreign to hear someone say. But it's true. They need to break through for Coach Madelon. This would be a big breakthrough season for him.
There's been mantle passing in the Ivy League. Let's go back to the late 80s, and it was Penn under Tony Seaman. That was a great team, and Cornell as well. Penn and Cornell were the two programs that were making championship weekend appearances, winning Ivy League championships. Then it shifts over to Princeton and Bill Tierney and the amazing run that Coach Tierney had at Princeton. Then Cornell under Jeff Tambroni seemed to take that away from Princeton, and they ran with it for a while. And now you have Yale, who has ascended to the top. Well, Brown, under Lars Tiffany, made a championship weekend appearance. And now you have Yale as that team that has worn, not only the Ivy League crown, maybe not the Ivy League tournament championship, but a national championship, national runner-up finish last year. And now you're looking at teams like Penn who's looking to take that mantle away from Yale. So it's been very interesting, the turn of events in the Ivy League. But since Bill Tierney has left Princeton, the Tigers have not had a whole lot to cheer about. So in terms of team accomplishment, that could change in 2020.
Well, let's get into one of those other Ivy League teams that has a big game this week. Number 8, Penn, coming off a loss to Maryland, plays number 10, Duke, Saturday at 2 p.m. in Charlotte.
Got to hand it to Duke. They, again, we talked about it last week in this space. A loss to Air Force, they won the face-off battle. They won the ground ball battle. They just didn't make offensive plays at the end of that game. So this is a team that is incredibly talented, and man, they went into Denver this weekend and really handed it to the Pioneers, a Pioneer team that I think is going to be ultimately pretty good in 2020, rolled out to a 6-goal advantage and then just didn't look back. And then you've got a Penn team that had Maryland on the ropes. They were up, 15-11 going into the fourth quarter. I think that lead was even greater previous to the fourth quarter beginning. And the Terps just blitzkrieged them down in College Park and came away with a really hard-fought victory. Think about it. That's 2 years in a row now that Penn's let Maryland get away. In Philadelphia last year, the Terps came in and stole one, and then this year they came back and ended up winning that contest. So this will be a terrific contest. Duke throttled Penn last year. Very dominant victory, 17-7. But that was in Durham. And I think Penn was still trying to figure some things out. This is a very good Penn team. I was very impressed with their offense last week. I think the defense needs a few adjustments. I think the goaltending spot is a little shaky, but that was a first game and a first career start in the Penn uniform for Patrick Birkinshaw, who's had some experience playing for Virginia. So we'll see if Penn can bounce back.
Let's move over to Duke's arch rival, number 7, North Carolina's. Their offense is just humming in the early season so far. They will travel to Homewood Field to take on the number 15 Johns Hopkins Blue Jays Saturday at 1:00 in a pivotal game for both teams, really.
Big time. And Carolina's a team 3-0, scoring a ton of goals, but the teams that they've played so far are not exactly what you call the upper echelon of Division I lacrosse. They're emerging programs and some programs who have had some success in the past, but right now they're not in that top tier. And there, it is a step up in competition for the Tar Heels this weekend. And they're going to face a Hopkins team that was held in check offensively a week ago at Loyola. Joey Epstein gave it a go, didn't look anywhere near even, I would say, 70%, 60%, 70% healthy. Just couldn't move all that well, it seemed, in the brace. And we'll see if he gets another opportunity to go out and play against the Tar Heels. Cole Williams, double donuts against Loyola. So you have to imagine that his pride a little bit. And he's got to be hungry this week. But you're looking at a Hopkins team that if they drop this game, then they're facing a stretch of, I believe, Princeton and then Syracuse, if I'm not mistaken. So the defense has played quite well for Johns Hopkins so far. Darby was good in goal, 11 or 12 saves against Loyola. But they haven't had to guard a player the caliber of Chris Gray, which they get this weekend. And they've got Michael Sowers coming up for Princeton and then pick your poison with Syracuse. So this is a big litmus test for the offense, I think, for Johns Hopkins. Carolina defensively, I think that the Jays are going to be able to score goals. So it's going to come down to possessions and face-off battle in this contest. Who could enjoy the majority of possessions, get into an offensive rhythm, and that could be the winner of this game.
All right, moving on. Number 17, Richmond, 2-1 now. They are a team that Maryland had to come back to beat, just like Penn 2 weeks ago. They'll travel to face the Fighting Irish, who looked very impressive in their season opener. That game will be Sunday at noon.
This is a Spiders team. Boris the Spider down in Richmond, beating Notre Dame last year, 9-8. Nice bounce-back win for the Spiders after dropping a double overtime heartbreaker to Maryland. Beat Marist on Valentine's Day, 13-11. That game was in Richmond. And then they beat Navy on Tuesday, a hard-fought 12-9 victory against the Midshipmen. So this is a Richmond team that I think is very talented. I think they're a very good lacrosse team. And this is a great opportunity for them to go in to Notre Dame. I figured, have they announced if the game's going to be in Loftus or if it's going to be in Arlotta? Is that game going to be outside or inside? If it's in Arlotta, I think I give Richmond a much better opportunity of contending with and maybe even beating the Irish. But if it's in Loftus, I think that's a huge advantage to Notre Dame. Brian Costabile, great start to his 2020 season. Liam Entenmann, a little bit of a surprise. Were you surprised that Entenmann, the talented freshman, got the start for Notre Dame?
No, that kid is – big things have been talked about for that kid since his junior year of high school. He's on the under-19 team for USA, and he was a great performance in the Under Armour All-Star game. So I'm not surprised at all that he stepped in and became the leader in goal for the Irish.
Yeah, I was just a little bit surprised when you consider the fact that Schmidt is the returner. You know, played okay in his first couple of years, but Entenmann seems to be, you know, not only the future but the present. So nice win for him to kick off his college career. And I know I sound like a broken record when we go over these games, but it'll be a great game. I mean, it'll be a really good game. Again, we're a sport that only has, at the Division I level, 75 teams. So any given week, you're having 5, 6, 7 games involving top 20 teams. And this is one of them, and it should be a terrific game.
Another Sunday matchup that should be lots of fun to watch is No. 9 Army goes to the Dome to face the No. 5 Syracuse Orange Sunday at 1.
Wow. When you talk about a team that has had success in the Carrier Dome, Army is one of the first, the most prominent to come to mind. I don't know the exact stats, but I think they've won three or four over the last 10 years in the Dome, including an NCAA playoff victory a couple years ago. Syracuse beat Army 10-8 last year. I'm kind of like, with this one, I'm scratching my head. Why is this game always in the Dome? I don't think I've ever seen Syracuse, at least in recent memory, go to Mikey Stadium and play at West Point. Is there a reason for that?
I think it's just they have to play early in the season because the Patriot League has so many games they have to play. So the best place to ensure the game happens is to play it inside and schedule it in the Dome.
I mean, shoot, the Army played Rutgers last weekend at Mikey Stadium and the weather was just fine. That's between those two programs. But if I'm Army, I think I've earned enough gravitas to basically say, why don't you come to our place every other year or at least every third year or something like that. But whatever, it is what it is. Black Knights will be licking their wounds after not just losing to Marist, but they were pretty much handled by the Red Fox. So huge win for Keegan Wilkinson and his team. Congratulations to them. But Army will be able to resettle, refocus. They'll learn from that loss. And they're going into to play a Syracuse team that has been clicking on all cylinders. This Orange team is for real. You know, wins over Colgate, wins over Binghamton. They take a big step up in competition when the Black Knights come to town. But when you talk about the midfield, you know, Brendan Curry, I'm a huge fan of Curry. Scanlon on attack now, and I think that makes Stephen Rafis so much of a better player. So it'll be interesting to see how this game unfolds, how Army responds to that loss, and how Syracuse is prepared to take on a team that has had success, a program that has had success and is not afraid of the Carrier.
Dix, we just listed 7 amazing games to watch this week, and there's several others, but maybe the marquee game of the week, for sure, really. I don't know, maybe. I think it is. We'll kick off the weekend Saturday at noon. You'll be on the call on the Big Ten Network when No. 3 Yale travels to Penn State, the No. 1 team in the country. Yale's had their number, winning the last 2 against them a year ago. Is this Penn State's year to break through?
Monumental game. And I was going to correct you there. I was going to say maybe the biggest game. No, this is as big as it gets for the month of February. You've got 2 teams from championship weekend going at each other, 2 teams that played each other in championship weekend just a few months ago in Philadelphia.
Two and great games last season.
Yeah.
Highly entertaining, great games.
Right. 14-13 regular season victory by Yale up in New Haven, and then the Eli duplicated the win 21-17 in Philadelphia. In a game that T.D. Erland just owned possessions. The Yale offense was really shooting the ball. You want to say they were shooting the ball really, really well, but I think we talked about this late. If we did a wrap-up last year, I know we talked about it one-on-one. In that game, I thought if Colby Knieves could have just come up with two or three saves just to get a stop and get the ball going down the other direction, because Penn State can score on Yale. I think that game could have turned out differently. And Knieves has been really, really good so far in the first three games of the 2020 season for Penn State. He's saving around 60%, which is really what this Nittany Lion team needs to get to the next level, which is to win a national championship. So we know about the offense. We know about the hybrid middies. We know that the defense is better and needs to keep improving, but they have to get that goaltender from Colby Knieves. When you look at this Yale team, they're different from last year in a lot of ways, but and mainly on the coaching staff. You have two brand new assistants, a new offensive coordinator, a new defensive coordinator. That Villanova win looks that much better. Their lone victory of the season, their lone game of the season, a week ago, 18-12, I believe, was the final. So this will be an explosive. Both of these teams can put the ball on the back of the cage. Both defenses will be tested extraordinarily. What goalie can have a better game? What goalie can make more saves, get more stops for their teammates? Brody Wilson was the starter for Yale in their win against Villanova, saved 13 shots. So Wilson for Yale, Knieves for Penn State. I think those don't want to put the entire game on their shoulders, because a lot of other things have to happen. Early at the faceoff, Gerard Arcieri and Jake Glass from Penn State have got to find a way to neutralize him in some way, shape, or form. But I think goaltending will be key in this Penn State Yale game.
Now, last year's regular season game, 14-13 Yale win, many more goals in May. What type of scoring range do you predict for this game? High scoring or somewhere in the low teens?
I think it'll be more I believe it'll be more similar to what we saw last February between these two teams. I definitely see the winner getting to maybe 15, maybe a 15-13, 15-14, if it's that close, because both teams possess the potential to blow the other one out. The offenses are that talented. So we'll see how this one plays out. But I anticipate maybe in the low to mid-teens.
Well, fans have definitely been looking forward to this game through the entire preseason and early February.
I've been looking forward to it.
It's finally here. Can't wait to hear you on the call. That'll be at noon on Big Ten Network. Can't wait. All right, Dix, time for the popular give and go. For new listeners, here's how this works. Dix, you're a professional broadcaster. You're good on your feet. I give you a topic, ask a question, and then you formulate your answer while I give you my thoughts on the subject. You ready for one?
I'm ready.
This week, there's this new restaurant in Columbia called Kazba. Have you heard of this? Kazba.
No.
It's a Turkish restaurant. I've had about I've had about five different people talk to me about this place who don't know each other. Ooh. And they're like, oh, got to go to Kazba. It's like a Seinfeld episode. Oh, Kazba, this Kazba, it's so good. It's so fun. Gotta have Kazba. So it's over on Snowden River Parkway, before you get the Broken Lamp. Do you know where the bowling alley and Hunan Manor and Supreme Sports Club is?
Yes.
It's in one of those little, there's two little shopping centers. It's in one of those. It's next to, the soccer shop.
Yeah, so it's down near, Grotto Pizza and all that.
Yeah. By the way, do you know that little soccer shop? It's called Al's World of Soccer or something like that. I was fascinated by that.
I probably do, because it's Angelo's, right?
Yeah, that's it. Angelo's.
Yeah, I do know that. Yeah, it's interesting. Growing up in Catonsville, Simply Soccer was a place in Old Ellicott City when I was growing up that had everything soccer. And I was a big, you remember the Subudio game for soccer?
No.
It was a lot, so basically it was like a big felt material field. And my dad made one for me and my brother. He took the felt and it was like it wasn't cardboard, maybe like corkboard or something. So it had a little bit more meat to it and made a field for us. And you have these little soccer players with a balance ball base, and you'd flick them and you'd kick the ball that way. And it was like, you had two or three touches to like get your guy to the ball and then he had to kick it. So it was like 1, 2, 3, he had to kick it and you played it down the field. And if you kicked it into a defender, you turned the ball over and then you go the other way and you would try to score a goal and like little goals. And the goalies were on a stick. And so it would be like maybe like a six inch stick and you place it underneath the goal and you could move them back and forth to make saves. It was a huge game. But not with a table and not with like you rotate with the handles and all that other kind of stuff. That's a game we're talking about.
Yeah, right? Foosball.
Yeah, yeah. So, but this was like with your fingers and actually it was good for like 10 minutes and then it got kind of boring because like, especially if somebody sucked and, you know, they couldn't touch the ball and then, you know, they couldn't get to it. They kept taking the ball into a defender or whatever. But Simply Soccer was the bomb. And Simply Soccer was located where the Pure Wine Cafe is now. I don't know if you're familiar with that, on the corner of Main Street and Old Columbia Pike in Old Ellicott.
I think I do know where that is.
Anyway. Yeah. I digress. Yeah. Having a son who plays soccer, you know, especially when he went to, what's that?
No, so I was just talking about Angelo's. It's surprising that when you see like a mom and pop, like sporting goods store or hardware store or anything like that, and you're like, how did this place stay in business?
Yeah. Yeah. It's people like me that have to go there and buy socks or buy, you know, now that my son's in high school, most of that stuff was taken care of. But when he was growing up and in youth league soccer, every year you had to get a different pair of cleats. And I wouldn't, you know, I would probably go to a larger store for that because the prices were a little bit better in terms of being a little cheaper. But for like, you know, for like uniform socks, uniform shorts, practice gear, like Angelo's is a really good store. So I think you got the one in Columbia. Then there's also, I think it's the same, I think it is Angelo's. There's one out in the Towson area.
I'm guessing if there's a soccer store named Angelo's, it's the same guy. So he has a chain. He's not even he's got two locations.
I think it's Angelo's
that we know about. He might have one in like Highland Town or Glen Burnie or something. Who knows? Anyway,
sure.
Kasbah.
So anyway, Kasbah.
A Turkish restaurant.
Rock the Kasbah. Let's go.
Have you ever had Turkish food?
I don't even know what Turkish food is. What is Turkish food?
I think it's like any other place. They have chicken and rice, and it's like kebabs and some type of rice with some sauce on it.
Then yes, I do like that.
But here's the question. You're going out to eat. Someone's like, what do you want? What are you in the mood for? What are your three go-to genres, ethnicities that you would say, top your list, this is where I want to eat?
Steak, and steak. Okay, hey, all right, everybody catch the games. Good talking with you, D-Fly. See you next week.
And then I want to know, like, what your worst experience is. I'll start with my worst experience. My in-laws.
All right.
Got to eat a lot. And one time,
you better be careful with this one. When you start off a story with
several years ago,
the category, you say, my in-laws.
Several years ago, they asked Amy and I to meet them in Silver Spring or some place down towards D.C., at a Burmese restaurant.
Burmese.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a reason you don't hear about Burmese food. Because Burma is between India and Chinese. And that's about where the food was. It was terrible. I couldn't eat anything there. The place was packed. Service was terrible. Food was awful. I was out of there. Had to eat something on the way home. I was just trying to be polite. Never go for the Burmese food. Here's my list. Top three. I'll go in reverse order. Mexican food. Love Mexican food. Mm. And there's several good choices around here. There's La Palapa. There's Uncle Julio's. That's over at the Columbia Mall.
Never been to Uncle Julio's. Yeah, when I go out to dinner, unless it's Seasons 52, I tend to stay away from malls.
It's right next to Seasons 52. Try it out.
Okay.
They do this thing. It's a pinata for dessert filled with fruit. It's a chocolate ball that they make, and you can watch them make it. And they fill it up with fruit, and they give you like a little bat made out of bread or something, and you hit it, and my kids think it's the coolest thing you've ever seen. But it's like a dessert for the whole table. And then there's my favorite restaurant of all time in Baltimore, Nacho Mama's. Love that place.
Yeah.
Love that place. You know, I drank 100 Natty Bows in there.
You drank how many?
100. They have a Natty Bow Club. You get your name on the wall.
Really?
And you get a Natty Bow hat. You got to do it in 1 year's time.
In one sitting? That's not healthy.
You get 1 year to do it. And I did it, probably like 8 years ago. It was one of the best nights of my life when I hit 100. Because I was there with one of my buddies, Steve Sowers, and he did it as well. So it was like the photos the next day were from like The Hangover. We're like, oh, here's us behind the bar. Here's Steve on top of the bar. Here's us with the owner of Nacho Mama's. Here's us with the bartenders. It was great time.
Instead of waking up and having a tiger walk across your hotel room, it was like a goat or something like that.
Number two, I'm gonna go with Japanese. Now, not Chinese. Nothing against Chinese food. I like it, but that's more of a takeout thing for me. I'm gonna go Japanese. You can get your sushi. Or you can get your hibachi, like steakhouse kind of thing. Love that. The hibachi thing with my kids. We go there and like you get a little show. The chef's good, does the fire and everything. Love that. We do that like every couple months. That's one of our go-to spaces. And then number one, Italian food. Could eat that anytime.
Oh, yeah, you do like the Italian. Yeah.
Now, all of those places I talked to, you can get steak there. That's what's great about a good Italian restaurant.
Right.
You got your seafood, got your steak. So I didn't want to single that out and have just a steakhouse or seafood place. I wanted to have like a, you can get all that at a good Italian restaurant. So could eat that every day. Number one, Italian. Your list. Go.
Okay. I have to really think long and hard about worst. So I'm a big lunch guy. I'm in sales, so I'm in and out of my car all day. Lunch oftentimes is the highlight of my day. If I don't have a lunch meeting or a lunch appointment, where am I going to eat lunch? I can tell you a worst for that. And it started out pretty good, but the worst is our sushi buffets. Sushi buffets are terrible for the most part. There was one that I used to go to years ago that was pretty good, and it was packed and it was pretty popular. It was a good deal. And I don't know if they changed a chef or chefs, but all of a sudden, like, the quality of the sushi was not as good. They started serving it with a lot of sauces on top. And look, you and I, we've been to Sushi King together, which I think is awesome, in Columbia.
It's the best spot in Columbia.
I like it when, if you want to have some sauce, like some yum yum sauce or something like that, where you can control it, like you can control the sauce. But these were being served like already prepared, and it was drenched in sauce. So I remember eating there, like I went there and I was like, this looks, whatever. But I was like, I'm hungry. I'm here. How bad could it be? And I was like, this stinks. And I haven't been back since. It's been about 3 years since I went. And we're not talking. This is a pretty well-known restaurant. So I don't want to give out its name, just to trash it. It's known. And again, it was a pretty good deal and a pretty good quality for a while, but then it just went downhill real quick. So that's probably my worst.
Did you get sick?
I will. I do have a worse though. Actually, my younger son may not even have been born yet. But if he was born, he was really, really small. We went to a Bayhawks game when they used to play at Homewood Field. And we went into Charles Village because you got to be OG and you got to support your, you know, mm-hmm. where you came from. And we went to the Rocky Run Tap and Grill.
God, you still love that place.
It was abysmal. It was atrocious. The service was terrible. The food was terrible. I think we got the kids or my older son, like a dessert. Was like a cookie in a skillet mm-hmm. or something with ice cream. Had a big hair in it. It was nasty. I had to really kind of search for that one. But that was terrible. And I could say Rocky Run Tap and Grill because they're out of business. And
you know two facts? Do you know the Columbia Ale House? And that used to be a Rocky Run. And that was awesome.
Yes. Yes. You liked it?
I did a lot.
Okay.
I'm sad when
I think we may have gone there once. I think we may have gone there once or twice, and that's why we tried the one downtown. You know, in addition to it being close to where we were going that night, and it was family friendly. Like that was one of the reasons why we took the kids there was because we knew you could have a screaming kid and you fit right in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that meal was oh boy, that was bad. That was bad.
Second
but let's
fact.
Move on.
Second fact, hold on. I'm pretty sure Rocky Run, one of the owners, was a Hopkins
lacrosse. Oh, don't stop it. I know. He's a Hopkins lacrosse guy, right?
Football guy.
football. Well, that makes sense.
It was one of them. And this is why they really won. Yeah. So I think that's more of a Charles Village issue and maybe the people who were working there than a Rocky Run issue. But nevertheless, you had a terrible experience.
Either who's ever responsible for it, it was an issue. It was an issue. So I remember we wanted to go to Charles Village Pub initially, and we walked into CBP and we're like, hey, how you doing? And first of all, they look at you. I mean, CBP is a great neighborhood joint in Charles Village. Love that place. Love going in there whenever I have an opportunity, grab a sandwich, have a beer. But it's not kid friendly. And you know, they were nice enough when we walked in, but when we asked for booster seat or, you know, child seat, whatever it was, I don't think they could stop laughing. So that's why we went next door.
Just brought you a phone book.
Yeah, they're like, what? Because they got that big bench seating in there, and that was not going to work for the kids. But anyway, that's the worst. But let's move on to the best, okay?
Get through the
you took the
stuff.
Word right out of my mouth. Yeah, Mexican. I can do Mexican anytime. My wife really doesn't like Mexican. The kids do. But the kids for Mexican for my boys these days is Chipotle. So, but you know, Lapa Lapa, one of my favorites. Ernesto's is a great place right around.
Yeah, that is good. Been there once.
Yeah. Enchanted Forest Shopping Center, really, really good. And then a good wine bar. A good wine bar is great, especially on.
Listen to you.
Oh,
if only
look at me.
18-year-old, 21-year-old Mark Dixon could hear you talking about a wine bar. He'd run you right out of Catonsville.
Back when Natty Lights, PBR, and Olympia was the Natty Bows with a steady diet back in college. No, love a good wine bar. Iron Bridge Wine Company here in Ellicott City is great. The Pure Wine Cafe that I was talking about in Old Ellicott City. Grand Cru is a great spot down in Belvedere Square. And then there's others that I'm sure I'm missing out, but you know, wine bar, it's just like, I don't know what it is, but when you go to a wine bar, there used to be a place also down in Canton. I think it's gone. Helen's Garden was, we had a fantastic meal.
Yeah, that was a good spot. I don't believe that's there anymore.
A long time ago. Right across the square from Nacho Mama's, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was like down the street from between Looney's and Clotta's.
Yes. But it seems like the wine tastes better when you're in a wine bar. I don't know if it's because you get your snooty pants on or maybe you're already half in the bag, but it's just the wine tastes better and the food is always exceptional. You know, really, really good food. The next thing that I would name is a place, a good brew pub, a really good brew pub. The Guinness Brewery is outstanding. Have you been there yet? Have we talked about that? Have
been
you
been there twice.
The Guinness Brewery yet?
I like went it, there no? to hang out and had a couple beers and a little bit of food, but never for a meal.
Okay. You should go for dinner. It's good. Okay. Nice. You know, it's a pretty basic menu. They've got some specials every now and again that are good, but what I like is I love Guinness. I love Guinness beer. And they have all these different types of Guinness that you can get. And they also have a rotating menu of quote unquote experimental Guinnesses. We went in the summer a couple of times and they had like this spicy Guinness. I forget what the spices were. Like when I say spicy, like jalapeno kind of spice, like you know, kick kind of spice. And it was, oh my God, it was fantastic. I can't remember exactly what, you know, what it was, but you know, chocolate stouts, you got the Guinness Blonde is there. You know, a place like the White Oak Tap, right next door to Ernesto's. You can see, like my circle of social activity, you know, so Ernesto's right next to White Oak Tavern, right next to Ernesto's. Incredible homemade beers and craft brew beers. The Ellicott City Brewing Company's fantastic. So a good brew pub. And then you can always, I mean, they always have decent menu, but you can always typically find a good burger at a brew pub. They know how to do burgers. So those are my three, but really, again, no joke, any good steakhouse is far and away number one. Far and away number one. The prime rib in Baltimore, been around forever. Probably in a lot of people's minds, outdated, but man, do they serve, they know how to serve a good meal and make you feel like you're, you know, Thurston Howell the Third and lovey.
So I got a question for you.
Yeah.
You're heading up to, when are you heading to State College? Friday night or Saturday?
Friday evening.
Yep. So where are you going to eat?
That's the thing. A few years ago, when I did my first game at Penn State, there was a chop house that Coach Tambroni told me about, and it was incredible. And I haven't been able to find it since. I did go to a brewery last year for the playoff game that I did first round, and it was good. It was okay. But Penn State, I typically don't get to eat a good dinner in Penn State because typically I'm doing the Sunday night game of BTN. I'll drive up on Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon.
And
then by the time we're done, State College is shut down. 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, they're shut down. I go to the Sheets and grab and make my own chicken sandwich and grab a drink and go back to the hotel room and pretend I'm Kramer eating the Kenny Rogers roast. Lay it on me. What do you got? State College. What do you got?
I don't know. You have to, our listeners or Penn Staters, all the Nittany
Lions. I thought you were going to have a recommendation. I will say, I did a game a couple years ago up at Penn State. I think it was a women's game and it was a February game. So it was bone cold and it was like a 3 o'clock game or something like that. When I got done, I went to the Permane Brothers. There. And I know that's not exclusive to State College. I know that's a Pittsburgh thing, but I haven't had Permane Brothers in probably about 20 years. I got a cap and cheese with two big beers, like a Miller Lite or whatever. It was like $10. It's like, I got to go back to college. This is awesome. So the Permane Brothers at State College is pretty legit.
There you go, fans. Now you know where to go after the game on Saturday. You watch Dix call the game. That's at noon on Big Ten Network, Yale at Penn State, and then go get a great sandwich afterwards.
Yeah. And again, that's a college town, so I don't know if you have very many. But that chop house was legit. If I could, I'll have to ask Coach Tambroni. We'll see what Coach D has to say.
All right, well, get a good meal and get ready for a big game, Dix. If you like what you heard, be sure to smash that like button and pass it on to a friend. Sharing is caring. Also, if you want to leave a note for us, hit us up on Twitter. He is at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLY at DFly. Also, be sure to check out the other podcasts on Inside Lacrosse. There's a new one every day during the season. Enjoy the games.